Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Couple gets married. Couple gets divorced. Couple doesn't spend time together anymore. This is what most people expect from a divorce, right? But how about drinks on the beach surrounded by laughing children? This was Laura Bazelon's reality when she decided to go on a family vacation with her ex-husband. Molly Ringwald reads us Laura Bazelon's essay, From Divorce, A Fractured Beauty.
Happy families are not all alike. Picture this one. A mother and father sit on a beach on the 4th of July with their two children, a boy, 6, and a girl, 4. The parents are just on the other side of 40, still relatively young, still relatively attractive. Their children are beautiful, hazel-eyed, tawny, and sparkling with precocious intelligence. They revel in the simple joys of sand and salt water, wading into ocean waves that roll up in green cylinders before melting into white froth. The parents bury the children up to their necks in the sand. They offer them apple slices when they are hungry and watch as they run off to play in a driftwood house. There are long periods of companionable silence. The sky is brilliantly, achingly blue. There are no harsh words, no frosty silences, no recriminations. When the mother and father are alone with each other, there is quiet conversation about work and school and camp, about what to make for dinner. There is even, occasionally, shared laughter. The mother and father do not fight over the laundry. They do not fight over money. They do not fight over their marriage. There is no laundry or money or marriage to fight over. Not anymore. Until this 4th of July family vacation, the mother and father had not slept under the same roof in 18 months. The ink on their no-contest judgment of marital dissolution still felt fresh to them. But they decided to take their two small children on a vacation together, to a beach house on an isolated stretch of bluffs in Northern California. And it is a happy one. This is my story. I am the mother. It's the story of my family. I grew up in a loving but undeniably hard-charging and overachieving environment. A world of moral absolutes, good, bad, success, failure, right, wrong. The worst thing you could do in my house was lie. The second worst was quit. Losing was acceptable, sort of, but quitting? Never. A promise is a promise, and it must be kept, my grandmother always said. More pointedly, my father would often remind us, if you say you're going to do something, you do it. Commitments that proved unexpectedly burdensome, even verging on impossible, were treated like a 5-set tennis match at Wimbledon. It was imperative to play every point, staying focused and determined to the bitter end. When my marriage, always troubled, took a sickening final turn, I faced a choice of two evils: spend my life lying to myself, to the outside world, and worst of all, to my children, or quit. I took the second worst choice, or at least that's the way it seemed at the time. There was no template for what was happening to my young family. Not one of my three sisters or any of my close friends had gone through a divorce. Looking at other broken families, I saw only what I emphatically did not want. Years of warfare waged in courtrooms and on soccer fields. No child's rite of passage immune from the parents' bitterness and hostility. In the weeks and months after the separation, I felt all of that and more. I was sad and scared and ashamed. But mostly I was angry. I went to bed full of loathing, relieved to finally be able to indulge my true feelings after hours of pretending, at work, while making small talk with the not-separated parents at daycare pickup, that everything was fine. A trial lawyer by training, I fantasized about getting my former spouse on the witness stand and skewering him. I had virtual exhibit books of his exact quotes, of pictures I had painted that he would not be able to explain away. You said this, didn't you? You did that, didn't you? Isn't that right? I was right. Always in my script, I was right. My ex-husband and I did not treat each other well during our short marriage. We were unable to make the other feel safe, loved, and appreciated. In hard times, we turned on each other. There was plenty of finger-pointing and grudge-holding, and very little benefit of the doubt. Our last year together was the loneliest of my life. At times, often when I was walking somewhere on a routine errand, sheer misery would make the world spin, and I would have to sit down until the dizziness and nausea went away. And yet, we had been in love with each other once, fiercely and absolutely. Yes, our son and daughter were the children of divorce, but they were conceived in a love that was passionate and tender. They were innocent. They deserved better than a childhood spent bearing witness to our worst selves. And so, we have remade our family, slowly, in fitful starts, with many setbacks. Day by day, we struggle to do separately what we could not do together, raise smart, thoughtful, decent kids by extending support and encouragement to each other. In the beginning, I braced myself for the inevitable questions my children would ask, determined to be honest no matter how brutal the truth. I practiced saying the words, "Mommy and Daddy don't love each other anymore." Then I woke up one day and realized it wasn't true. There was love. An abundance of it. We just had to respect and accept that it was not the love of happily ever after. As it turns out, the world of moral absolutes is ill-suited to divorce. It isn't a question of good, bad, success, failure, right, wrong. It is a recognition that what existed is irretrievably broken and that something else must be built in its place. Divorce, at its best, is a love reborn, birthed from heartache and rage and despair, and ultimately forgiveness, that creates a different kind of family. I suggested the 4th of July family vacation with trepidation. I was surprised, and then a little scared, when my ex-husband agreed to go. Part of me had been hoping he would dismiss the idea outright by telling me I was insane. It was a little insane. All that time away, just the four of us? Especially given that the majority of our married vacations had been disasters, loud arguments followed by days of wrathful silence. This time we were careful and considerate and respectful. We talked, we planned ahead, we evenly divided the meals, the bath times, the downtimes, and yes, the bedrooms. The children talked about the trip for days beforehand and afterward. Throughout, they were nearly wild with happiness. It went so well, I am not kidding, that my ex-husband suggested that we stay an extra day. And we did. The last night was particularly stunning. The setting sun streaked gold bars across the sky and made the gnarled trees glow. The ocean darkened and seemed to still. We sat silently beside each other in wide wooden chairs on the deck, cradling glasses of red wine and taking it all in. Inside, our children shrieked and laughed, chasing each other around the living room. 6 months ago, 6 weeks ago, it could not have happened. But somehow, together, we had made it to this improbable other side. Happy families are not all alike. Some are fractured and misshapen. To appreciate them, you have to adjust your line of sight, your level of expectation. They have seams and scars, but they are beautiful still, in their odd, imperfect way. That night out on the deck on our 4th of July vacation, my ex-husband turned to look at me. "I think I'm having a moment of transcendence," he said. There was a lump in my throat. I closed my eyes and swallowed it.
Molly Ringwald reading Laura Bazelon's essay, From Divorce, A Fractured Beauty. Laura wrote this essay over a year ago. We'll catch up with her after the break. We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. After Laura Bazelon's essay was published, Modern Love readers began debating her choice to vacation with her former husband. Some argued that it was irresponsible, creating false hope in her young children. Others sent in notes about how they had done the same thing, with great success.
Those responses were incredibly affirming. Often, the couple post-divorce had gone on vacations as a family for decades and even eventually brought along future partners. They told me that they believed their children had benefited tremendously from their ability to continue to have a loving, caring relationship, even though they were no longer together.
So how are the kids?
My son just turned 7. My daughter just turned 5. They're doing incredibly well. They're thriving. They're both loving school, sports, being outside, being with friends. They had the time of their lives on the vacation. They still talk about it. And I think for them, it was really a magical experience.
Magical, maybe, but ready for mass consumption? When Laura realized this essay might actually be published, she needed to tell her ex-husband.
I decided that we should meet in person. He came to the house that we once lived in together and into the office that we once worked in together. We sat on opposite ends of the couch. I had printed out the essay and I gave him the pieces of paper and he read it. He didn't have any expression on his face. I couldn't read anything just by looking at him. And there was total silence and it felt endless. And then I realized he was reading it again. And so I sat and I waited while he read it a second time. And then I watched his face and one tear slid out of his eye and ran down the side of his cheek. And he looked at me and handed the essay back and he said, "It's true." It's funny, I always had such a romanticized idea about marriage. I used to devour fairy tales when I was a little kid, and my parents, who met in college, my mom was 16, my dad was 18, they'll have been married for 50 years later this month. Their marriage is really remarkable. It's not that they're perfect or that it's a perfect marriage, but it's undeniable that they're still madly in love with each other. And that is an amazing thing to have experienced as their child. And it's also a very high standard to live up to. One of the hardest things for me about the decision to get a divorce was the realization that I was not going to have that story. I was not going to have my parents' marriage, which really is a love story. And when I sound wistful at the end of the essay, it's because I am. It's because it's very hard to realize that I may never get to experience that, and certainly didn't experience that in the brief time that I was married. There are times when I feel real grief about the end of the marriage. At the same time, I don't ever doubt the decision because I really believed, and still do, that I tried everything I possibly could to make it work, and that in the end, there was nothing else left to try.
Laura lives and works in the Bay Area as a writer and attorney. And while she says she still believes in love, she doesn't actively seek out new relationships.
I don't feel an urgency about it. I was very lucky. I wanted my children, and I got to have them. And not everybody gets that, if they want children. They have a fantastic dad. And there's this thinking, even still in 2016, professional women who are single with small children, they're missing something if they don't have a partner, and that we should somehow feel sorry for them, that they're incomplete. I don't feel that way. My life is very full. When I'm with my children, which is half the time, I'm a single parent, and it's completely consuming. When I'm not with my children, I get to see friends, I get to write, I get to think, and I like spending time by myself. That will change, and I hope very much that organically something will happen, and I would love to fall in love again.
But Laura's relationship with her ex-husband continues to grow in surprising ways, though she says society doesn't always make that easy.
We have very limited language to talk about people who were once married but aren't anymore, and we call them ex. And that's a fairly harsh word. It basically means out of or out from under, removed. That's the Latin root of it. And I find that it's kind of a clumsy term to capture what post-divorce relationships are like for many people, particularly if they have children. I said that once to my ex-husband, and of course I'm using that term now because it's the term that's available. And I said at one point to him, I feel that this has been a failure, even though I also feel that we've gone on to do something remarkable. And part of the reason I think why I feel that is because of the language, these very awkward terms. So I was talking to him about this, and he sent me a text later that I found to be very moving. He said, "We may no longer be husband and wife, but we'll always be partners in this life together." And I think that's true, and it's very comforting.
Laura Bazelon, writer of this week's essay, From Divorce, A Fractured Beauty. She's currently working on a book about men who have been exonerated from death row. There's more after the break. Welcome back. Daniel Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times, says societal scripts often play a major role in the way we see ourselves and our lives.
There's a particular script for divorce that says, you know, if you don't feel like you should be married anymore, then you split up. And once you split up, you don't do things together anymore. And I'm always intrigued by these stories that challenge that script. And why can't we strike out and try to do this in a new way? And again, these sorts of decisions are always made against this chorus of naysayers, but it's a success, and the kids are happy, and happiness, even for a week, is worth something. It's such a sort of happy discovery at the end of this piece for them to see that they can manage this. If they can manage it once, maybe they can manage it again. You know, seek joy where you can seek it.
Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. Thanks again to Molly Ringwald for reading this essay. She told us she felt a personal connection with this story.
it really spoke to me. I'm divorced. I didn't have children with my ex-husband, but I just easily imagined that this could have been my life. And I really respected the author. I was really moved by it and just thought that it was very subtle and very authentic and truthful. And then I got to the end and I went to look at who wrote it, and I realized that it's an old friend of mine.
So, turns out that Molly was actually connected to this essay. Laura and Molly met years ago in New York when mutual friends invited them to dinner.
We went into this restaurant, and I'll never forget it. She was sitting at the table, and she looked exactly like the Molly Ringwald from the movies. Everything was the same. But the thing about her is that she's so real and down to earth that it wasn't awkward or strange. And eventually, it just seemed like having dinner with a warm, funny, gracious human being.
Special thanks to Molly Ringwald. You can see her right now in an off-Broadway production of Terms of Endearment. It runs through December 11th. Next week on Modern Love, Dan Savage of Savage Love reads his own essay about his adoptive son's desire to know his self-destructing biological mother.
What if he wanted to know why his mother didn't love him enough to take care of herself, so she could live long enough to be there for him, so she could tell him herself how much she loved him when he was old enough to remember her and to know what love means?
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Our casting consultant is Amy Lippin, CSA. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.